There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this rainy Wednesday. Although the rain moving on to the east, things getting better through this afternoon and this evening. Get more from our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, coming your way just about 23, 24 minutes from right now. Also coming up this hour, we'll be joined by AL1, our Congressman Bradley Byrne, who is not in Washington because the House physician there at the House of Representatives said they shouldn't come back. Or at least that's what Speaker Pelosi said. We'll talk to Congressman Byrne about that and so much more. Get your questions answered, too, for federal response here on the coronavirus. We're going to ask those questions coming up in the next couple of segments. Also, must be here to listen to this at 1 o'clock today. And if you don't, if for some reason you have an excused absence, you know, if you haven't, but signed by your parents, if you have an excused absence, then maybe you can go back and listen to the podcast. But Dr. Alec Yasinsack, he is Dean of Computing at the University of South Alabama, is going to join us because he did a paper back in 2012 where he observed problems with voting by mail. Now, this is something that, you know, absentee voting, voting by mail, you heard it discussed around the country. You've also heard about the absentee voting being opened up here in the state of Alabama going forward. He's looked into this, and he's talking about the pitfalls with vote by mail for abuse, you know, either abuse or just neglect in the system. So we're going to delve into this and talk with him coming up at 1:05, and that will be a must listen to. So make sure you stand by for that. And then a couple of news items here. There's so many things going on, so I just can only pick out so many here that get to the top of my stack. And this one here, here's when panic hits. We talked about the meat shortage, right? It's been a discussion. President Trump talking about using federal power to be able to compel and change some rules and have the meat packing places be able to keep working. They've had cases of coronavirus, and now, you know, people say, well, they're shut down because of this. Well, now there's this meat shortage out there, and the president may move forward with the Defense Production Act to keep the meat processing plants open. Dalton, I saw this one. This is where I think the panic sets in. From Fortune.com, this popped up earlier this morning. Boneless chicken is the first to go scarce as coronavirus hits U.S. meat supply. You know, it's the scare tactics because they know where to get the people with the boneless chicken. Let me just say something. Now, we talk about the sacrifices made during this time of pandemic and what we're doing here in the United States. We're all, you know, obviously on a serious note, people are going without. People are staying in. But these are sacrifices we're making. I would say, compared to the sacrifices our grandparents made in World War II, this is a cakewalk, staying in and watching Netflix. Now, on the economy side, completely different story. Huge sacrifices being made. But the quarantining, come on. And if you can't get boneless chicken, if that's what's driving it, if you can't get boneless chicken, you know, maybe the sacrifice is eating chicken with a bone in it. I am a fan of bone-in chicken. I think I'm not on a war path against boneless chicken. It's fine. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. So you boneless chicken people, that's fine. But maybe you could just show some solidarity with everybody else out there and quit complaining about boneless chicken being scarce. Because that's what this whole, the whole story, it starts off with a discussion of, you know, the meat supply in crisis. And then he goes, well, really right now it's more boneless chicken. Sometimes you have to sacrifice. Sometimes you have to sacrifice and have bone-in chicken. I'm sorry. It's tough. It's almost living like cavemen, I know, and cavewomen. But do what you can for the country and enjoy your chicken with the bone in. And by the way, too, they're looking at these the meat producers out there. By the way, side note, and if I'm speaking for you, do let me know on the text line. This is what good old boys and good old girls all around wait for, right? This is like getting to use your winch on a truck to pull somebody out of a ditch during an ice storm down here that happens once every 10 years. We got freezers stocked with venison and snapper and you know, all kind of things out there. This is the time that folks like that feel like, see, neighbors, they were questioning about me. You want to come over and get some meat now, huh? Not so bad after all. It's just, this is the time they've been waiting for. So the meat shortage, I don't know. Are y'all actually seeing a meat shortage out there beyond boneless chicken? Because that looks like that's the big, big issue. Boneless chicken is the driver of this discussion. Also, I do want to talk about this later on in the show, but I think I put this story up on Twitter, after we talked to Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson this morning about the city within its rights under the changes to now tomorrow, the Safer at Home order from Governor Ivey that still doesn't open up restaurants and hair salons, barbershops, gyms, all those things don't get opened up. What kind of what kind of rules will Mobile have? He's following the direction of the governor. He's not, didn't seem crazy about that on all counts, but he's trying to figure out a way around it. He did mention also on the show this morning the curfew is off as of tomorrow, but the face mask thing in Mobile is still, even after the change, is still a suggestion. It's a strong suggestion to wear face masks into public venues, right? You go into the grocery store or something, you wear the face mask in. Did you see the story out of Birmingham? Because remember, Mayor Stimson said that you can't go above what the restrictions are. He couldn't change certain things here in the city because the state has control over municipalities. And we talked about that before when municipalities wanted to change their minimum wage and the state had come out and said no. Well, in this case, you have a state directive on face masks. You saw Dr. Scott Harris yesterday with it casually hung around his neck, which I thought was a cool look for him going on, but the state is suggesting and recommending face masks. So is the city of Mobile. Well, news story out yesterday, they passed it. Birmingham City Council yesterday approved an ordinance, so a new law there, that requires, this is just like we're seeing in some places elsewhere in the country, but this is in Birmingham, the ordinance requires face coverings for all people 2 years old and older. Okay, so this is now the law. It is not a suggestion. It's not a best guidance, best practices. It's the law that in Birmingham, you have to have the face mask on if you're outside, with a few very small exceptions. So how that's going to sit, I don't know, since it's different than the advisement from the state level. All right, so that's some of the subjects we're going to talk about when we come back over the next 2 hours. As we return, we'll check in with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. Got some questions from him. He is not in Washington. He'll tell us why coming up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Sometimes, in deference to the sacrifices our forefathers have made in this great republic, if you can't have boneless chicken for a couple months, and that's just a big sacrifice you make, then toughen up. All right, toughen up, cupcake. All right, let's welcome to the air AL1, our Congressman Bradley Byrne, joining us now, not from Washington, and that's part of my first question. Congressman, first of all, good afternoon, and why not in Washington?
Because the speaker has decided not to bring us back to Washington. It's her decision. It's not the attending physician's decision. It's not Steny Hoyer's decision. It's her decision. she's gotten a bunch of pushback from some of her members to say they don't want to be there because they're scared. Well, that's ridiculous. We've got Americans all over this country showing up to work in much more threatening circumstances than what we're in up there. And we can't show up and do our work. What she's really shown is that the House has become non-essential.
Wait. You're quoting the Congressman, the House, in her estimation, the House of Representatives is a non-essential service in this country.
That's right. That's right. And that's because she would like to run everything herself without the other 434 upset. You know, we confuse things for her.
That's true. That's true. You're an impediment to what she wants to get done. So the Speaker says that. What does this do? Because, I mean, I'm thinking about so many questions. We can go back and we'll talk about the CARES Act and the supplemental. But there's other questions out here, let alone all the other things you do. The other questions about what's next in federal response to this getting the economy back online and fighting coronavirus. Are y'all just off until that she feels like there's no danger of anybody getting sick? What's the benchmark?
Well, the benchmark is whatever she wants to do, because she gets to run the floor of the House of Representatives. We, you know, we're the Republicans in the minority. We don't get to run the floor. We're saying, why aren't we back? And she says, because I said we're not going to do any business here. What she wants us to do is to agree to all this crazy proxy voting, and we do hearings by telephone and all that sort of thing. Come on, we need to go up there. You've got to wear a mask everywhere. Show up and do our darn job. We got some things we do need to do. We need to pass the National Defense Authorization Act. We got some appropriations bill for the rest of the government we got to deal with. We'll probably have to make some changes to what we've already done in the CARES Act. But while the rest of the country, people in the rest of the country are going out working at grocery stores and drug stores and, you know, at meat packaging plants and construction and manufacturing, the United States House of Representatives, we're back in our districts. Now, I'm working like crazy, but I think we need to be up there performing the job we're supposed to do up there, which is oversight and hearings and passing needed legislation.
Okay. I asked about the benchmark. So it's truly that arbitrary. It is when the Speaker decides that it's okay.
That's right. Under our rules, she runs the floor. The rest of us do not run the floor. And when we were in charge, our speakers ran the floor. John Boehner and Paul Ryan ran the floor. Now, they have a lot of people advise them. It isn't just totally one person, but ultimately it is that one person. Ultimately, it's her decision, and whatever she decides is what she does. What we're hearing is that she's gotten some big pushback from some of her members about coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Republicans, we're ready to go back. We're ready to get back to work. But we can't go back if she won't open the floor for us, and she won't even have committee hearings for us.
It's a strange thing. It brings me into like kind of an offshoot in our conversation, but I've noticed this over time. When you look at response to the coronavirus, and you look at the response to reopening America, getting the economy back going, things that I thought would be the same to everybody have definitely taken, like, even here at home, you know, in the state, that the Republicans want to get back to work up on Goat Hill, and many Democrats did not, right? Democrat leadership in the House and Senate in Montgomery did not. Same thing's true in Washington. Why does one set of politics say, you know, we don't want to go back, and one set of politics say, yeah, we want to get back to work?
I can't explain to you at the state level what's going on. I have been listening, as a lot of us have been listening, to Senator Vivian Figures and her just right. General fears about reopening anything. So I don't know whether she's reflecting a broader view among Democrats or not. In Washington, I think it does have something to do with the age of some of the people in the Democratic Conference. They've got a lot of older members, and I think they're concerned for their own personal health. Now, Sean, I'm 65 years old. I don't feel threatened going up there. My gosh, they take uber precautions. I mean, we have to have on masks. Everybody on the floor that's working for the House wears gloves and masks. They've got disinfectant everywhere. When we vote, they literally just kind of herd us through like cattle. You know, we just vote and get out of the room. I mean, the day before I was in Washington, I had to go to Home Depot, and it was like two different scenes altogether, Home Depot and Daphne and the House of Representatives in Washington.
Right.
I mean, it's just like it's unreal.
And the difference is, though, I think maybe you had that to compare it against, and I can't speak for folks that are in the Democrat ranks there and older members there, but maybe they don't have any reason to have to go maybe they're sheltered enough they didn't go to the Home Depot in their town. You see what I'm saying? They didn't go to the hardware store. They could live in some kind of bubble.
Some of them are truly, like, completely hunkered down. Like, don't leave their houses at all. Don't go to the store. Don't do anything. I mean, one of them told me that he literally had not left his house until he went to the airport to fly to Washington in weeks. Like, come on, guy, I'd go crazy if I had to do that. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to obey these rules as best I can. I'm sticking around my house pretty close, but there's stuff you got to do, there's stuff you got to have. You got to have food, and there are certain things you got to do around the house, you know. It's just literally some of the people I'm listening to in Washington, I'm like, you sound like you're just generally scared, and we shouldn't be scared.
And I think that's a good thing to talk about, because I think a lot of what happens in reaction out of citizens, whether they're here in AL1 or, you know, half a country away, is based on fear. And fear maybe coming from the fact that they don't know all the facts. We don't know all the facts, or fear of what might happen next, fear of where their next paycheck's coming from, fear of they're going to have a job.
Well, and some of those fears are absolutely legitimate. But some of the fears that we're under right now are the result of a national news media that just hypes the heck out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Any little piece of bad news they can put their hands on, they just blast out there because it's good for their ratings. And also it gives them an opportunity to thump a president that they loathe. And, you know, they're out there scaring people. I mean, think of some of the projections that were thrown at us a month or so ago, none of which have proven to be true, and most of which have been rescinded. But that didn't stop the headlines, and it didn't cause the news media to say, wait a minute, we told you X, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
They never retracted. They just keep on going like, all right, we got the newest thing. Well, that's not responsible journalism, in my view.
I couldn't agree more with that. I deal with that every day, and we talk about how the story changes, and we also, when somebody will come on and say, hey, here's a new thing, we say, well, okay, let's look into it. You know, it might be tomorrow that it's not the new thing, or this may be true. I'd like to hear from more people, not because I want there not to be the knowledge, but I want truth. And it's okay for officials, I think, at some point to go, I don't know. We're working on it. We got the best people working on it. We're going to get you an answer. Right now, here's what we have, but I don't know what happens in 6 months, what happens in 2 years. I don't know.
Well, the truth of the matter is that they don't know.
That's fair. That's fair in some cases to say, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a new virus. It has some attributes we haven't seen in previous viruses. It obviously has either no effect or very little effect on the vast majority of people that get it. But there's a very small percentage of people that get it that it's deadly to. I mean, mm-hmm. It is deadly. We know that the case fatality rate in the United States right now is somewhere between 3.5% and 4%. Now, the case fatality rate is not the real fatality rate. That's just based upon how many people we've tested. We hadn't tested nearly enough people. But, you know, when you look at the data in Alabama, about 12% of all the people who've been tested positive for it end up in the hospital. Now, most of them don't end up in an ICU, but they end up in the hospital. Anytime you go to the hospital, it's serious. It's very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So the concern we have is that this thing just, it's very easy for it to be transmitted, even by asymptomatic people. And there's a small group of people for whom it is absolutely deadly. Now, we had a breakout last week in Mobile in some nursing homes. And
yep.
If this thing gets going in a nursing home, it will kill a lot of people. So we absolutely have to take that very, very seriously.
Now, agreed. Just joining us, talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne. And and we'll come back to the health side of it and the actual fight against the disease. But let's talk economics for a second. And the PPP loans that you've talked about since the word go with us and the CARES Act out there. So you'll have a tranche or the supplement to the act, right? So the another $300-something billion in for small business, right?
Right. We put another $310 billion into the program, and so far this week, you know, it just started Monday with this newest thing. They shut down for a week or so there. They've already made through noon yesterday 475,000 loans of over $52 billion. So we're back to, and I'm hearing, you know, anecdotally from local people that their loans are coming through, so that's good.
I'm hearing the same. Yeah, a lot of people. So, but what? Okay, so that's happening, and that's a good thing. Of course, my next question would be, Congressman, or what happens when that amount runs out?
Well, we have to put this. This is my main time saying this, Sean, but you can't. The federal government cannot substitute for the American economy. We have to get working again. We have to start opening up our society. Understand there's some risk involved there. There's no such thing as no risk. But we are elevating the amount of testing that's occurring in this country literally every week. We had 2 days last week when we tested 300,000 people a day. Now, that's not exactly where we got to be in order for us to be at the promised land, but it's getting bigger every week. So the testing's going up. We don't have the pressure we had on PPE a few weeks ago. And we've got to start understanding that the American economy is going to die if we don't let people open back up again. The governor took a very tentative first step yesterday. Governor Abbey did. But it's one of many steps that she will take. I mean, she didn't even do a full phase one yesterday, but she did something. And I'm grateful she did something. I wish she'd opened up restaurants. I wish some of these personal services could have been opened up. I think the rules for the beach that she announced are probably unworkable, but at least we got something going.
You're not the only person on this radio station today to say exactly that, Congressman, that at least she did something. Yes, it's better than doing nothing. I agree, but there's a lot of people say, look at May 15th, and that may be a finish line too far if they even believe things will get better by May 15th.
Well, we've already lost a number of small businesses that won't come back. And every one of those losses is a tragedy. We know that we've lost some other businesses who thought they were going to be able to open up Friday and were told they couldn't open up Friday. We know we've already lost some businesses out of that. We don't know how many yet. Remember, we've got 50,000 people in my district who've lost their jobs in just the last several weeks. 50,000. So this is a tragedy, an economic tragedy of, like, epic proportions.
Yeah, we run up against a hard break here. Coming right back, I want to get more of this. We're talking to AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne about the situation on the healthcare side and our economy. And that is the first time I had heard that number of actual jobs lost here in AL1. Shocking.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, online at fmtalk1065.com, which, by the way, our online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. These numbers have moved quite a bit, and that only happens when we have a large volume of people voting in the online opinion poll question. It is, are you satisfied with Governor Ivey's safer at home order? Right now, the numbers have moved to 86% of y'all saying no, 14% saying yes. You can vote online, front page of fmtalk1065.com. Continue our conversation with our Congressman Bradley Byrne, who is checking in from here in district because, well, Speaker Pelosi has said y'all can't come back to work in Washington. And do I have that right? Do I have it correct?
That's right.
Okay.
We're obviously not essential.
You said it. You said,
I'm telling you, we're obviously not essential.
Well. I'm behaving myself. You said something that was really sobering before the news break. And you said the number of job losses, I had not heard anybody give it a number until you had. The number of job losses in AL1 from this is how many?
50,000.
Wow. Can you imagine any other situation where you had, in that quick a time, your congressional district, AL1 here, lose 50,000 jobs?
No. I mean, not even in hurricanes do we have that. So it's a, this is an economic calamity. And it's a self-inflicted economic calamity. We have got to unlock the door and let businesses get back to business. They know, I've talked to tons of them, they know they got to do things differently. They're more than prepared to do that, and they'll do it. But we can't lock up the business world and expect America to continue. There's not enough money at the disposal of the Congress or the Federal Reserve or the President that we can shovel out there into the American economy to replace the American economy. We've got to get it going again. And my frustration is that we somehow have let the national news media just scare the bejesus out of so many of us that we can't give some rational thought to, all right, what's the reasonable approach here? We've got some governors that are beginning to step out there and say, all right, I'm not going to be held up by this anymore, like Ron DeSantis in Florida used to serve in the House with me. And good on them. I think they're making rational steps based upon the situation in their states. Remember, the numbers we have here have been driven largely by the New York metro area, the Detroit metro area, and a couple other places like New Orleans. The vast majority of the rest of the country is not having that experience. Yet we're all on this sort of lockdown mentality because of that. And I think that is very unwise for the country.
Yeah, I want to ask a specific question we got toward the news break there. So a barbecue restaurant owner out of Saraland called and was talking about the eight-week window. And those of us that have gone through this program with PPP realize you have this eight-week window to use the money from PPP. But he said that was too short of a term. I've heard that from other people, and probably you have as well, that they need more time on this to apply that money.
Oh, I've heard it across the board, not just restaurant owners. I've heard it from just about everybody. And so I think that's something that we need to revisit when the next bill comes up. Now, what I've said is what scares me is what Nancy Pelosi is going to hold over our heads, what she's going to try to put in the legislation so that we'll vote for, because we're trying to get some relief to people like this restaurant owner in Saraland. I mean, it's just horrible, the political situation we're in. But I think the eight-week thing needs to be extended. Now, remember, the 8 weeks don't start until your loan's been funded. So you got 8 weeks whenever they started funding your loan. So it may not be as bad as some people think, but I think we need to extend it. I don't know what the right time period is, but I do think we need to extend it some.
Hey, this is good. You bring this up, and maybe this is a good time to get some clarity on it, because it is framed by Democrats, Speaker Pelosi, and others, that what y'all, being Republicans in Washington, will try to do is y'all, you know, they're just trying to get something for the working men and women when y'all are pushing, you're pushing policies for big companies out there and through the CARES Act and through the PPP and all this. I wonder how much that argument, I mean, do they truly believe it? Is it believable? What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, they're going to say what they're going to say. But
what's truth?
If you look at the average loan in the PPP program, it's just over $200,000. 75% of all the loans made into PPP so far have been for less than $150,000. So these are not loans to big businesses. There have been some things in the press. I know about that. But the vast majority of these loans are going to small businesses that desperately need this to tide them over. And yeah, I see that as being a matter of national importance, and I'm supporting that. But I'm not going to go in there and vote for all this other crazy stuff that she throws at us. But she'll try to leverage us on the next bill. You watch it. She tried to leverage us on the first two. She'll try to leverage us on the next one.
Yeah. Whenever she does actually let y'all come back to work, right?
Yeah, when we become essential again.
Just want to point that out right now, deemed not essential by the Speaker of the House. All right, when we talk about federal money here, too, there's a lot of discussion, and rightfully so, the one-time payments to individuals, also the PPP. But help me understand the CARES Act and how the money goes out to the states, because there's been a lot of discussion. You know, I was wondering last week about, or the week before, about comments from Senate leadership, we'll put it that way, Mr. McConnell, about letting states go bankrupt. And now, you know, you have the questions about, okay, Alabama's looking at $1.7 or $1.8 billion, but that can't just go to general fund. That has to go to COVID-19 response. What's your sense of this? How will be the money be applied here in Alabama? Are there rules that will make it, like they said, where it only can go for COVID response, or could it be general fund? Do you have any idea how that would work?
Well, right now, they can't use it to repair economic damage for either the state or for local government. And if you talk to people at the state level or in the local government level, they'll all tell you that they've been hurt by the economic losses. You know, when businesses aren't functioning, when stores aren't selling stuff, you know, you don't have sales tax. And sales tax is a huge deal for state and local government in states like Alabama. So I think it's a legitimate point they made. Although I would say this, I know one of the things that Dr. Harris, the state public health officer, is concerned about is getting testing out to some parts of the state that don't have it as easily as the rest of us do. Well, take some of that darn money we've sent him and go out and hire some of these people that don't have a job and have them go out there and get these testing kits out there. I mean, take some of it and use it for what we need to do on testing. But if we can't spend all of it, then maybe we need to go back and say, all right, you can use some of that for your economic losses. What I'm not for, what Senator McConnell's not for, which I don't think anybody listening to this radio show is for, is for us to bail out states that have been poorly managed, poorly administered, and have run up their public pension costs, and we're just going to bail them out because we're in the middle of this pandemic. I'm not for that. I won't support that.
But did you when he said that he thought about bankruptcy out there? Now I know he's walked it back. Was he just mistaken at that point, or is that a thought process that goes around Washington? To me, back home here in Alabama, that seems like a horrible precedent.
Well, states can't go bankrupt under the Constitution, and there's no provision by which a state can go bankrupt.
Right, but he was talking about like maybe some change or something. It just seems like a really bad idea.
Oh, no, I don't think it's a good idea either. I think what you do is you go to the states and say, show us what your actual losses are from the pandemic, okay? Not all the problems you've created in the past 3 or 4 decades because you can't run yourself right. I'm talking about Illinois in particular. But show us your actual losses. That's what I'm on the Education and Labor Committee. A lot of the education groups have said, we need X number of billions of dollars. And I'm like, okay, where'd that number come from? Rather than just get it from these groups, I'd like to have the state financial officer for every state to tell us exactly what you've lost in terms of what your education budget would have been. Show us what the actual loss is. It's not 100%, okay?
Right.
But it's something. And let's start with that number. And let's start with what each of us have to do to make sure that we don't let our schools go under, because we don't want our schools to go under. So there's got to be more rational thought put to this than has been put to it so far. And just to have some of the governors that are in the most affected places, like New York and Detroit, have them get up and talk about how terrible things have been. And they have been terrible in those states. And I want them to get the resources they need to deal with it. But to have them try to leverage that to get us to give them a bunch of money to repair a problem that they created or their predecessors created with poor management, no, I'm not for that.
No, yeah, and it seems like, I know you're even two or three steps ahead of me on that, but just the only area should be on the left side. It should be revenue coming in, not expenses, right? I mean, the coronavirus didn't cause more expenses in schools. It caused more for a state to operate this, that, or the other, but you're only trying to match the revenue that they're not receiving to be able to use that, right? I mean, that's what you're doing for in the PPP, right? You're helping that small business that doesn't have the revenue coming in. You're not making a judgment on their expenses. You're making a judgment like, hey, y'all got knocked back. You're not getting money. Here's the money to pay your employees. It seems like it should be that measure that's applied to the states, not, hey, we're going to, retake history here and fix your problem for your big promises from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. It is a revenue problem, and it's a revenue problem because most states are not dependent upon property taxes. They're dependent upon income taxes or sales taxes or some common or use taxes that are tied to the function of the economy. And so I get that, and I think there's some room for discussion there. But for them to come in and say, we've got $11 billion in pension obligations, save us. My reaction to that is, no, I'm not going to save you. If you've made bad decisions about your state pension program or your municipal pension program, it's not the American taxpayers are not supposed to be there to bail you out for that.
I want to, before we wrap up here, also I saw on your Twitter feed that if people have more questions, that you are like famous for town halls, but that has been nipped in the bud as well. But you're doing it. You are still doing them. You're just not doing them in person, right? It's online.
Yeah, I do these teletown halls where we actually do it on phone. And if they go on my website, they'll actually find the way to get on it tonight. I think it's at 5:20. And it's at 5:20. If they'll go on my website, they'll find out how they can dial in and be a part of it. We spend an hour. I do a little bit of talk at the beginning just to give everybody a frame of reference for where we are. And then I take questions like I do at my regular town halls. We've had we've been averaging since this coronavirus started in these town halls about 4,000 or 5,000 people. So we get a lot of people calling in to listen. So I hope people will take advantage of it.
Is that, I mean, that's significant. I'm not saying that the people who come out in person are, you know, not a good thing, but I don't know that you've had many town halls that have 4,000 or 5,000 people at them.
No. But most congressmen around the country are doing this, and most of them are having the same experience that I'm having, which is people are hungry for information. And I think this is a good tool. It's not an inexpensive tool, by the way. Every one of these things costs money, and we have to be careful about how much money we're spending for them. But I think it's very useful to get information out to my constituents, so we enjoy doing them.
Very good. We'll put those links up as well. I'll share it on the Twitter feed, and we'll put it up on the Facebook page. And as we conclude, you are in solidarity with me that if we need to sacrifice boneless chicken and eat bone-in chicken to make it through this meat crisis, you're okay with that?
I had bone-in chicken last night. I like grabbing onto the bone while I'm eating.
There you go. See, do we have that commonality. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time. And, let me know when y'all become essential to the U.S. government, when the speaker says y'all can go back to work.
We will indeed do that.
All right. Thank you. It's our Congressman, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. And we're coming right back. Take some calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106. A lot of bone-in and boneless chicken commentary going on as well on our text line. It's lunchtime. What do you expect, huh?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
No, all I'm saying is the headline under the meat supply crisis, it just says boneless chicken is first to go. Okay? Boneless chicken is first to go. And that is, I think that's what's actually caused the panic. And I'm just saying, do your part, you know, in some kind of very small homage to what the greatest generation and their sacrifices and so many sacrifices made by so many in this republic. If y'all got to eat a piece of chicken with the bone in for a while, shut your trap, all right? Boneless chicken. All right. We talk about small businesses in our area, and that is definitely you think about that, you hit the Wikipedia entry, you see a picture of my buddy Angelo and Ron and Nancy and everybody at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry who have stayed open and navigated this new economy, and they continue to do it every day. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, dude?
It's good. It's good. And we talk about that, kind of a split deal. Number one, on the gold and silver side, y'all are open. People can come to the store, can get the advice and make that purchase, and y'all are purchased, right? Like, walk them through what part is open there.
Yeah, so right now we're buying and selling gold and silver bullion, gold and silver scrap. So from that side of things, we provide a necessary service to the community because we're allowing them to be solvent cash-wise. They can bring in some old scrap jewelry, maybe a sterling silver flatware set that they've never used that grandma passed down to you 20 years ago. We can turn that into cash for you. So that's a great way to help pay some bills, get some things taken care of, maybe buy some of that boneless chicken you were talking about a second ago. The other side of our business, though, we actually sell jewelry. We sell those open L knives and things like that. We're not doing that in the store right now, but we have navigated successfully to doing that online.
Okay. And you act like, oh, we just kind of, y'all are dominating it. You, with all those items up there, people can do the same shopping that they would. I mean, the same things, which are a bunch that are there in the store, they can check out online. And like you said, you can also check out Open L Knives. So,
well, Sean, it's easy. All you have to do is sleep about 3 hours a night, and it works.
Preach.
It works.
Preach, brother.
Yeah. No, my temperament might be a little rough right now, but we'll survive. We'll get there. So yeah, if you go to mobilebaycoins.com, you click on the shopping button, that's actually going to bring up a link to our eBay store, and we've got, as of this morning, over 9,500 items in that eBay store. So if you're concerned about things that are going on, you really don't want to get out into the real world like that, check all those cool pieces of jewelry just in time for Mother's Day. Check out the Open L knives, the cool collectible coins. A lot of those items you can click on, buy, and we'll ship it right to you. You don't even have to leave your house.
And I appreciate it. And remind folks in, they're going to drive there to talk some gold and silver with you. How do they find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. And if you have any questions when you get here or on the way, call us at 725-1590. And like we just said, You can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com, or like and follow us on Facebook or Instagram.
Great stuff. Thanks, Angelo. We'll talk tomorrow.
Have a good one, buddy.
Hey, you too. One of those small businesses that is staying open for you and being creative in how they do it, I appreciate that. By the way, and we're coming to the phones, but this one text. Now, this is interesting. I don't know this texter's name. I don't, you know, I can't speak for the veracity of this, but it might very well be true. And this is interesting. So, you know what we can do? We can research this. But thank you to the texter for bringing this up. Said, in response to the restaurant in Saraland concerned about using all the PPP loan within 2 months, if they are concerned about the forgiveness aspect of the loan, and if y'all haven't followed this, what the texter's talking about, I'm talking about the person who called in, that the amount of this PPP loan that business owners use to pay salaries and also certain expenses, rent, power, you know, utilities, that it's forgiven. That part of the loan is forgiven. In other words, you don't pay back. And I think the remainder that wouldn't fall under that, I think, is at 4%. I think that was the last number I saw. This texter says, if they're concerned about the forgiveness aspect of the loan, it is my understanding that the money from the PPP loan can be used for bonuses also. So they could use the money for some kind of hazard bonus for their employees. That is very interesting, unnamed texture. Thank you for sending that in. I can dig around and try to see more on that. That is, thank you. It's, as much as I've looked at it, not just to do the show, like I said, we're small business. We're locally owned small business. I know it's shocking in the media world to have, but we're one of the one of those that are left right here, hometown operated radio station. So we're like a barbecue place. We're like any kind of local business. We're in the same boat. And I did not know that. I know I had talked earlier about people somewhat trying to delay the start of that payment. Like it gets approved, but they're trying to not take receipt of the payment to try to stretch out the term so they could be opened back up by the time they used it. But this is interesting. You could pay some sort of hazard bonus for employees. All right, to the phones. And Tim in Silver Hill is up next. Hey, Tim.
Hey, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I just have a quick question about the unemployment part of this whole scenario that we've got going on. If if someone is denied unemployment but is actually unemployed in direct as a direct result of this virus situation, is there another means for this person to follow up, a different place to go to, maybe to apply differently and maybe get some money? And then if that's the case, let's just say they open up that business that that person's involved in and he still hadn't gotten the unemployment, can they go back and retro act where they were first laid off?
Right, so go back and retroactively collect on the unemployment you didn't receive. Well, you know, there's two parts of this. Is the denial from the federal supplement or from the state level?
Well, I'm thinking, I'm not sure, because this person works at a gym. So the gym closes and now they can't work. But when they applied for unemployment, they did not get
really
approved. So I'm thinking, well, that's, I don't know if that's from the state or from the federal, because just the website, I guess, that they went to. So I'm just curious if how anybody in that range of employment would fall into that same scenario. They're laid off because of the coronavirus.
It seems like, and speaking from no level of authority on this, that you would fall under that definition. But I'll tell you what we can do. We can take your question, Tim, and we can frame it to those in the know, and then we'll bring somebody on here, or I will get a recording with them. We'll come on and talk about it by the end of the week and get you an answer.
Great, great. Because I'm thinking now that they're getting ready to open, a lot of people who have been waiting aren't going to be, you won't know how to handle it at this point. Basically, you're employed again, and what do you do for that?
Hey, great question. Great question, man. I appreciate it. Right up at the end of the hour, wait till next hour. You're not going to want to miss this.